Pin ran after it and picked it up. "The murderous rogue!" cried Eomer, but Gandalf was unmoved.
"No, that was not thrown by Saruman," he said, "nor even at his bidding, I think. It came from a window far above, a parting shot from Master Wormtongue, I fancy, but ill-aimed. The aim was poor, maybe, because he couldn't make up his mind which he hated more, you or Saruman," said Aragorn. "That may be so," said Gandalf. "Small comfort will those two have in their companionship. They will gnaw one another with words. But the punishment is just. If Wormtongue ever comes out of Orthanc alive, it will be more than he deserves. Here, my lad, I'll take that. I didn't ask you to handle it," he cried, turning sharply and seeing Pippin coming up the steps, slowly, as if he were bearing a great weight. He went down to meet him and hastily took the dark globe from the hobbit, wrapping it in the folds of his cloak. "I'll take care of this," he said. "It's not a thing, I guess, that Saruman would have chosen to cast away." "But he may have other things to cast," said Gimli. "If that's the end of the debate, let's go out of stone's throw at least." "It is the end," said Gandalf. "Let us go." They turned their backs on the doors of Orthanc and went down. The riders hailed the king with joy and saluted Gandalf. The spell of Saruman was broken. They had seen him come at call and crawl away, dismissed. "Well, that's done," said Gandalf. "Now I must find Treebeard and tell him how things have gone."
"He'll have guessed, surely," said Merry. "Were they likely to end any other way?"
"Not likely," answered Gandalf, "though they came to the balance of a hair. But I had reasons for trying, some merciful and some less so. First Saruman was shown that the power of his voice was waning. He cannot be both tyrant and counsellor. When the plot is ripe, it remains no longer secret. Yet he fell into the trap, and tried to deal with his victims piecemeal, while others listened. Then I gave him a last choice, and a fair one, to renounce both Mordor and his private schemes, and make amends by helping us in our need. He knows our need, none better. Great service he could have rendered, but he's chosen to withhold it, and keep the power of Orthanc. He will not serve, only command.
He lives now in terror of the shadow of Mordor, and yet he still dreams of riding the storm.
Unhappy fool! He'll be devoured if the power of the East stretches out its arms to Isengard. We can't destroy Orthanc from without, but Sauron, who knows what he can do?
And what if Sauron doesn't conquer? What will you do to him? Asked Pippin.
I? Nothing, said Gandalf. I won't do anything to him. I don't wish for mastery. What will become of him, I can't say. I grieve that so much that was good now festers in the tower. Still, for us, things have not gone badly. Strange are the turns of fortune. Often does hatred hurt itself. I guess that, even if we had entered in, we could have found new treasures in Orthanc more precious than the thing which Wormtongue threw down at us.
A shrill shriek, suddenly cut off, came from an open window high above.
It seems that Saruman thinks so too, said Gandalf. Let's leave them.
They returned now to the ruins of the gate. Hardly had they passed out under the arch, when, from under the shadows of the piled stones where they had stood, Treebeard and a dozen other Ents came striding up. Aragorn, Gimli and Legolas gazed at them in wonder.
"Here are three of my companions, Treebeard," said Gandalf. "I've spoken of them, but you haven't yet seen them."
He named them one by one. The old Ent looked at them long and searchingly, and spoke to them in turn. Last he came to Legolas.
"So you have come all the way from Mirkwood, my good elf? A very great forest it used to be."
"And still is," said Legolas, "but not so great that we who dwell there ever tire of seeing new trees. I should dearly love to journey in Fangorn's wood. I scarcely passed beyond the eaves of it, and I didn't wish to turn back." Treebeard's eyes gleamed with pleasure.
"I hope you may have your wish ere the hills be much older," he said.
"I'll come, if I have the fortune," said Legolas.
I've made a bargain with my friend that, if all goes well, we'll visit Fangorn together, by your leave.
Any elf that comes with you will be welcome, said Treebeard.
The friend I speak of isn't an elf, said Legolas. I mean Gimli, Gloin's son here. Gimli bowed low, and the axe slipped from his belt and clattered on the ground.
Oh, no, said Treebeard, looking dark-eyed at him. A dwarf and an axe-bearer? I have goodwill to elves, but you ask much. This is a strange friendship.
Strange it may seem, said Legolas, but while Gimli lives, I shall not come to Fangorn alone. His axe is not for trees, but for Orknecks, O Fangorn, master of Fangorn's wood. 42 he hewed in the battle.
Ho! Come now, said Treebeard, that's a better story. Well, well, things will go as they will, and there's no need to hurry to meet them. But now we must part for a while. Day is drawing to an end, yet Gandalf says you must go ere nightfall, and the Lord of the Mark is eager for his own house.
Yes, we must go, and go now, said Gandalf. I fear that I must take your gatekeepers from you, but you'll manage well enough without them.
Maybe I shall, said Treebeard, but I shall miss them. We've become friends in so short a while that I think I must be getting hasty, growing backwards towards youth, perhaps. But they're the first new thing under sun or moon that I've seen for many a long, long day. I shan't forget them. I've put their names into the long list. Ents will remember it. Ents the earth-born, old as mountains, the wide walkers, water-drinking, and hungry as hunters, the hobbit children, the laughing folk, the little people. They shall remain friends as long as leaves are renewed. Fare you well. But if you hear news up in your pleasant land, in the Shire, send me word. You know what I mean, word or sight of the Entwives. Come yourselves if you can.
We will, said Merry and Pippin together, and they turned away hastily. Treebeard looked at them and was silent for a while, shaking his head thoughtfully. Then he turned to Gandalf.
So Saruman would not leave, he said. I did not think he would. His heart is as rotten as a black horn's. Still, if I were overcome and all my trees destroyed, I would not come while I had one dark hole left to hide in.
No, said Gandalf, but you've not plotted to cover all the world with your trees and choke all other living things. But there it is. Saruman remains to nurse his hatred and weave again such webs as he can. He has the key of Orthanc, but he must not be allowed to escape.
Indeed, no. Ents will see to that, said Treebeard. Saruman shall not set foot beyond the rock without my leave. Ents will watch over him.
Good, said Gandalf. That is what I hoped. Now I can go and turn to other matters with one care the less. But you must be wary. The waters have gone down.
It will not be enough to put sentinels round the tower, I fear. I don't doubt that there were deep ways delved under Orthanc, and that Saruman hopes to go and come unmarked before long. If you will undertake the labour, I beg you to pour in the waters again, and do so until Isengard remains a standing pool, or you discover the outlets. When all the underground places are drowned, and the outlets blocked, then Saruman must stay upstairs and look out of the windows.
Leave it to the Ents, said Treebeard. We shall search the valley from head to foot and peer under every pebble. Trees are coming back to live here, old trees. Wild trees, the watchwood we will call it. Not a squirrel will go here, but I shall know of it. Leave it to Ents. Until 7 times the years in which he tormented us have passed, we shall not tire of watching him.
Chapter 11. The Palantir. The sun was shining behind the long western arm of the mountains when Gandalf and his companions, and the king with his riders, set out again from Isengard. Gandalf took Merry behind him, and Aragorn took Pippin. Two of the king's men went on ahead, riding swiftly, and passed soon out of sight down into the valley. The others followed at an easy pace. Ents in a solemn row stood like statues at the gate, with their long arms uplifted, but they made no sound. Merry and Pippin looked back when they had passed some way down the winding road. Sunlight was still shining in the sky, but long shadows reached over Isengard, grey ruins falling into darkness. Treebeard stood alone there now, like the distant stump of an old tree. The hobbits thought of their first meeting, upon the sunny ledge, far away on the borders of Fangorn. They came to the pillar of the White Hand. The pillar was still standing, but the graven hand had been thrown down and broken into small pieces. Right in the middle of the road the long forefinger lay, white in the dusk, its red nail darkening to black.
"The Ents pay attention to every detail," said Gandalf.
They rode on, and evening deepened in the valley.
"Are we riding far tonight, Gandalf?" asked Merry after a while.
"I don't know how you feel with small ragtag dangling behind you, but the ragtag is tired and will be glad to stop dangling and lie down."
"So you heard that," said Gandalf. "Don't let it rankle. Be thankful no longer words were aimed at you. He had his eyes on you. If it is any comfort to your pride, I should say that, at the moment, you and Pippin are more in his thoughts than all the rest of us. Who you are, how you came there, and why, what you know, whether you were captured, and if so, how you escaped when all the orcs perished. It is with those little riddles that the great mind of Saruman is troubled. A sneer from him, Merry Arduk, is a compliment, if you feel honoured by his concern."
"Thank you," said Merry. "But it's a greater honour to dangle at your tail, Gandalf. For one thing, in that position one has a chance of putting a question a second time. Are we riding far tonight?" Gandalf laughed.
"A most unquenchable hobbit. All wizards should have a hobbit or two in their care, to teach them the meaning of the word, and to correct them. I beg your pardon, but I have given thought even to these simple matters. We will ride for a few hours, gently, until we come to the end of the valley. Tomorrow we must ride faster. When we came, we meant to go straight from Isengard back to the king's house at Edoras over the plains, a ride of some days. But we've taken thought and changed the plan. Messengers have gone ahead to Helm's Deep to warn them that the king is returning tomorrow. He'll ride from there with many men to Dunharrow by paths among the hills. From now on, no more than two or three together are to go openly over the land, by day or night, when it can be avoided."
"Nothing or a double helping is your way," said Merry. "I'm afraid I wasn't looking beyond tonight's bed. Where and what are Helm's Deep and all the rest of it? I don't know anything about this country."
"Then you'd best learn something, if you wish to understand what's happening. But not just now, and not from me. I've too many pressing things to think about."
"All right, I'll tackle Strider by the campfire. He's less testy. But why all this secrecy? I thought we'd won the battle."
"Yes, we've won, but only the first victory, and that in itself increases our danger. There was some link between Isengard and Mordor, which I've not yet fathomed. How they exchanged news I'm not sure, but they did so. The Eye of Barad-dûr will be looking impatiently towards the Wizard Vale, I think, and towards Rohan. The less it sees, the better."
The road passed slowly, winding down the valley. Now further, and now nearer, Isen flowed in its stony bed. Night came down from the mountains. All the mists were gone. A chill wind blew. The moon, now waxing round, filled the eastern sky with a pale, cold sheen. The shoulders of the mountain to their right sloped down to bare hills. The wide plains opened grey before them. At last they halted. Then they turned aside, leaving the highway and taking to the sweet upland turf again. Going westward a mile or so, they came to a dale. It opened southward, leaning back into the slope of round Dol Baran, the last hill of the northern ranges,
green-footed, crowned with heather. The sides of the glen were shaggy with last year's bracken, among which the tight-curled fronds of spring were just thrusting through the sweet-scented earth. Thorn bushes grew thick upon the low banks, and under them they made their camp, 2 hours or so before the middle of the night. They lit a fire in a hollow, down among the roots of a spreading hawthorn, tall as a tree, writhen with age, but hale in every limb. Buds were swelling at each twig's tip. Guards were set, 2 at a watch. The rest, after they had supped, wrapped themselves in a cloak and blanket and slept. The hobbits lay in a corner by themselves upon a pile of old bracken. Merry was sleepy, but Pippin now seemed curiously restless. The bracken cracked and rustled as he twisted and turned. "What's the matter?" asked Merry. "Are you lying on an anthill?" "No," said Pippin, "but I'm not comfortable. I wonder how long it is since I slept in a bed." Merry yawned. "Work it out on your fingers," he said. "But you must know how long it is since we left Lorien." "Oh, that," said Pippin. "I mean a real bed in a bedroom." "Well, Rivendell, then," said Merry. "But I could sleep anywhere tonight." "You had the luck, Merry," said Pippin softly, after a long pause. "You were riding with Gandalf." "Well, what of it?" "Did you get any news, any information out of him?"
"Yes, a good deal, more than usual. But you heard it all, or most of it. You were close by, and we were talking no secrets. But you can go with him tomorrow, if you think you'll get more out of him, and if he'll have you."
"Can I? Good. But he's close, isn't he? Not changed at all?"
"Oh, yes, he is," said Merry, waking up a little, and beginning to wonder what was bothering his companion. "He has grown, or something. He can be both kinder and more alarming, merrier and more solemn than before, I think. He's changed, but we've not had a chance to see him much yet. But think of the last part of that business with Saruman. Remember Saruman was once Gandalf's superior, head of the council, whatever that may be exactly. He was Saruman the White. Gandalf is the White now. Saruman came when he was told, and his rod was taken. And then he was just told to go, and he went.
Well, if Gandalf has changed at all, then he's closer than ever, that's all," Pippin argued. "That glass ball, now. He seemed mighty pleased with it.
He knows or guesses something about it. But does he tell us what?
No, not a word. Yet I picked it up, and I saved it from rolling into a pool.
Here, I'll take that, my lad. That's all.
I wonder what it is. It felt so very heavy."
Pippin's voice fell very low, as if he was talking to himself.
"Hallo," said Merry.
"So that's what is bothering you. Now, Pippin, my lad, don't forget Gildor's saying, the one Sam used to quote, 'Do not meddle in the affairs of wizards, for they are subtle and quick to anger.'
But our whole life for months has been one long meddling in the affairs of wizards," said Pippin. "I should like a bit of information as well as danger. I should like a look at that ball."
"Go to sleep," said Merry.
"You'll get information enough sooner or later. My dear Pippin, no took ever beat a brandy buck for inquisitiveness. But is this the time, I ask you? All right. What's the harm in my telling you what I should like? A look at that stone.
I know I can't have it, with old Gandalf sitting on it, like a hen on an egg, but it doesn't help much to get no more from you than a 'you can't have it, so go to sleep.'"
"Well, what else could I say?" said Merry. "I'm sorry, Pippin, but you really must wait till the morning. I'll be as curious as you like after breakfast, and I'll help in any way I can at wizard wheedling. But I can't keep awake any longer. If I yawn any more, I shall split at the ears. Good night."
Pippin said no more. He lay still now, but sleep remained far away, and it was not encouraged by the sound of Merry breathing softly, asleep in a few minutes after saying good night. The thought of the dark globe seemed to grow stronger as all grew quiet. Pippin felt again its weight in his hands, and saw again the mysterious red depths into which he had looked for a moment. He tossed and turned and tried to think of something else. At last he could